Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. I'm Luann Crane, and Dr. Dobson, we have here with us today a consummate storyteller.
Well, most of our friends out there already know about Ken Davis. He's been on the air with me for more than 20 years, nearly 25, with recorded messages. And I didn't remember to this morning, Ken, that you've actually been in the studio with me.
That's right.
Before. I didn't remember that. All I remember is all those wonderful recorded speeches that you've given, that you've allowed us to air. When was it that we worked together?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I don't even remember what I had for breakfast. But it was, if I'm not mistaken, it was when you first came here to Colorado, when you moved from California here to Colorado. I came and was your guest. You interviewed me over a book that we had done, and I can't remember the name of the book.
You must have done a magnificent job, because I don't remember anything about it. But anyway, I couldn't be more excited to have you here today.
Well,
I love and appreciate you and what you do more than I can say.
Well, thank you. I enjoy your friendship and have always enjoyed your show. You introduced me to a man who became my hero and mentor, a guy by the name of Evie Hill, who was one of the most unique and finest communicators, just able to drive home a point. I really loved listening to that man, and you were the one that introduced me to him.
Well, you and I both listen very carefully to the people God has particularly blessed and talented in speaking, don't we? You can just learn so much to see what comes natural to them.
That's right. It's a passion of mine.
Well, we used to have a speaker who came to our church that would just get up in the morning, on Sunday morning, to talk to us, and he would begin like this. He would just say, "Well, I'm so glad that you guys are here. You know, when you woke up this morning, the last thing you needed was to get up and get dressed and come to church. And you came here just wondering, is there anything for me that the Lord's got to say?" And I'm telling you that there is. He's got you.
Yeah.
You know, he has absolutely got
you,
because he's talking about you and your circumstance.
That's right.
That was Reuben Welch, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you ever heard him.
He knew how to connect.
He did.
You know, if a person comes up and begins giving the most magnificent speech with a powerful introduction, it's canned. It's a canned speech. But if you make that connection, and sometimes it's a story, sometimes it's that kind of introduction. If you fail to connect with the audience, they will fail to hear what you're trying to say.
Somebody isn't going to understand this, Ken, but I use scripture when I speak, because that's the source of all knowledge, but not at the beginning.
Yeah.
You get up and you read scripture, and you sound like every other preacher.
That's right.
I'm not a preacher, but you sound like everyone they've ever heard. And by the time they get through with the prayer, they're asleep, you know.
I will wrap the beautiful truth that holds everything together in a delightful package that is different for each audience, and you do the same thing, so that people will say, "Yes, I want to see what's in there. I want to hear that."
Well, you love talking to people, don't you?
Oh, I do.
And speaking. Yeah. How in the world did you come to the conclusion that that was a life profession for you?
The doctor slapped me and said, "It's a boy."
That was it.
It's a gift. It really is a gift. There have been several steps along the way where God reveals to you what he has put inside of you, how he has wired you. And the reason I don't say that just as a punchline, the doctor slapped me and said, "It's a boy." I believe that from before the beginning of time, he knew what he wanted to put within me, how he wanted to wire me.
Yeah, Ryan was a talker at 2 years of age.
Oh, yeah.
We knew it then.
Yes.
Honestly, we did.
I believe it. I believe it. I was in high school trying to be an athlete. I never will be an athlete. I have the hand-eye coordination of a carp, which is just a nasty fish. And I got beat up on a continual basis. I was skinny, It was a difficult time for me. And I remember in an English class, we were studying Shakespeare. And there was this wonderful woman. Her name was Frances W. Peterson. She taught literature and English. And of course, my interest in literature and English was intense. But I hid it because it meant more beatings. That was sissy stuff, you know, football and basketball.
You really did get bullied.
I got bullied, yeah. Now, it wasn't constant. You know, I look back on my high school experience, and there's a lot of it that was very, very good. But there was always the fear of those certain children, and there was always the feeling that I was less than worthy because I couldn't catch a football. I wasn't really well coordinated. It's so funny. I tell people today that God has a sense of humor. He gave me an intensely competitive spirit and nothing to back it up. And so I'm left with presenting the gospel, you know, and maybe that's his intention. Anyway.
Did it assault your sense of worth?
Oh, absolutely.
To be beaten up like
oh,
that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Did that play any role in the development of your humor?
Absolutely, because humor kept them from hitting me.
Yeah. Hmm.
Sometimes I could make people laugh. And I don't want to create a false impression here. I wasn't lying in a bloody heap every day at school. It wasn't that. I wasn't afraid to go to school. It was just that I walked carefully. Mm-hmm. And, of course, one of those steps then is to not exploit the fact or be demonstrative about the fact of how much I loved literature and how much I loved English and how easy it came to me. Well, this beautiful woman recognized that. She was an older woman. We were learning Shakespeare, and there was a quote from Shakespeare that had a mild curse word in it. And I raised my hand and suggested several other possible adjectives that could have been used there. And I did this to make my friends laugh, to try to build some kind of worth and friendship, and so that people would say, whoa, he's so funny. But I assaulted this wonderful teacher with my language, and she didn't deserve this. She was so kind to me. Well, she made me stay after school. And as you know, when you stayed after school in those days, you missed your bus. They called your parents. Mm-hmm. They came to get you. They did not bring a lawyer. They brought a small 2x4. And as I sat waiting for my parents to come, she corrected papers, made me pull my desk right up to her desk. And I can still see, Dr. Dobson, those long, slender fingers. She capped her pen and laced them together and said, "Look at me." And I looked at her. She used my full name. She said, "Kenneth Alpheus Davis." And I thought, here it comes. I'm expelled. I'm in severe trouble. She said, "God has given you a wonderful gift. And you're using it to destroy my class."
You're kidding.
No. She said, now in some places she'd be fired today, but she said, "I want you to go out for speech." And even then I stood up out of my chair and I said, "I'm not going to do that. My friends have letter jackets with macho symbols. I'm not going to walk around with a set of lips, you know, swinging from my jacket." And she said, "You will go out for speech because the alternative is unthinkable. In fact," she said, "you will go out for humorous interpretation." And that was a place where God drove a stake in the ground that reminded me that I might never catch a football, which has become true, by the way, and I might never play a below-par round of golf. But God doesn't make mistakes.
You know, Ken, that sort of illustrates something that I have believed for some time, and I don't think I'm the only one that's observed this. But professional comedians like yourself are usually people who experienced very painful childhoods, and they struggled when they were young.
Yeah.
And one of the classic examples of that was Jonathan Winters, who was one of the world's funniest men, I think. I used to just crack up when I heard him. And I was watching him on television a long, long time ago, and he was speaking very candidly about his childhood on television. And I never heard him at any other time out of character as a comedian. But he was talking about not having a father when he was young. I think his mother and father were divorced and the father left, and so he grew up without a dad. And those were the days when most families were intact. And so his friends in the neighborhood would make fun of him and ridicule him because he didn't have a dad. And Jonathan said he would become so angry and he would beat them up. He was bigger than they were and he'd beat them up. But when they weren't looking, he would go out behind a tree and he would cry. And he said, and I'll never forget this line, he said, "All of my humor is a response to sorrow." I think that probably characterizes many successful comedians.
I couldn't say with certainty that all of my humor came from pain. It's very interesting. The best definition of humor I've ever heard is this. Humor is a gentle way to acknowledge human frailty. So one of the reasons that sometimes Christian people don't like humor is because it does point out the weakness of human nature. Almost all humor points out something that's wrong. Now, I love that. I love that. Years ago, I made a tape called "I'm Not Okay, You're Not Okay, But That's Okay."
That's okay. I remember it.
And the reason is because it isn't really, you know, that's the essence of faith. The essence of faith isn't coming to God and saying, "I've got it all together now. I'm perfect. Will you accept me now?" The essence of God is coming with our weakness in front of us, coming and saying, I'm a sinner. I haven't got it together. Please help me." And trusting what Christ did on the cross. So I have always identified humor from that standpoint. And from that standpoint, much of my humor, if you analyze it, is what you would call self-deprecation.
Yeah.
I don't go after other races. I don't go after other people. I talk about things that are common to all of us.
All of Phyllis Diller's humor came from that source. She said that when she was a girl, she was such a dog they had to throw a bone down the aisle to get her married. She talked about having the first peek-a-boo dress. First they'd peek and then they'd boo. You know, I can just name the comedians who use self-deprecating humor in that way.
And even today, they're the funniest. You know, it's very, very interesting. Here's another thing. Forgive me. You're speaking with an ADHD person, so my brain captures things out of the air. Here's another very interesting thing. The most hilarious humorists in the world are not the one-line deliverers. I often ask people in our workshops, how many of you have heard Bill Cosby tell a joke? And they all raise their hand. It's not true. He doesn't tell jokes. I've never heard Bill Cosby tell a joke. He tells stories.
That's right.
Yes.
He relates real life stories. You know, the feelings he had toward his son when he wanted the keys to the car. He tells real life stories. And then to make them funny, he exaggerates them beyond imagination. And he knows how to tell them in such a way that he drops those special punchline moments into a very real story.
So you learned to do that very, very early.
Yes.
And knew that was a gift. By the way, speaking of a gift, what that teacher said to you was priceless. You began to get a fix on who God made you to be.
That's right.
And then you went on to develop this. And at some point, you must have decided God can use this. When did that occur, when you saw that you can bring people to an understanding of biblical truth and Christian principles by the stories that you tell?
Do you want the correct answer or do you want the real answer?
Let's take the real one.
For many, many years, my humor was designed to protect myself, to build up my worth with the people around me. As I graduated from high school and moved on and did some nightclub work and began to work in with some church youth groups and larger groups, professional groups around the country. I still remember thinking, I have to make them laugh. Hmm. I never saw the laughing faces. I saw the ones that weren't laughing. And my desire was, would you love me too? Please love me too. And so I think a turning point came one time when I was performing at a nightclub in Denver. And one of the little girls that was a waitress and brought drinks to people was sitting on the doorstep when I came out. And she was crying because people had stiffed her. They had not given her enough tips to even get home. And on the way home that night, the face of that girl stayed in my mind.
That's still tender to you, isn't it?
I realized that night that even though I had done something, one club owner called me up after I had done my show. The audience had stood in a standing ovation. He said, I've never seen a standing ovation. He said, tonight you did a standing ovation. In my club, you did a standing ovation, he said. And this man didn't use one blue word. That's the way he described it. And then he went on to tell how amazed he was at that and used maybe a dozen in the process. But the truth is, the standing ovation, when I left that night, I had given those people a moment of reprieve. But there were people in there whose marriages were falling apart. There were people whose children were going in directions that terrified them. There were people in there who had lost a loved one. And I really hadn't given them anything on a permanent basis. And I remember driving home that night and saying, God, I'm not sure of the extent of this gift. But from now on, I want to make sure that I use this gift with the right idea in mind. I want to use this to enrich people's lives by introducing them to you. But every time I step on the stage, there are people out there all the way from antagonistic toward anything that has to do with Christ to believers. And my job is to glorify the Lord by somehow making a presentation that can hopefully bring them one step, two closer. Steps, three steps, and some of them all the way to the foot of the cross.
You know, Ken, you and I have walked some similar paths and we've drawn similar conclusions from them. And we've discovered some of those similarities today in our observations. And I want to share something with you now that I'm a little uncomfortable in sharing because I've never done it before and because it sounds so self-serving. But when I finished my PhD, my little world exploded, and I was getting hundreds and hundreds of speaking requests. And one of the things that I observed during that era, that what was happening was a gift, and that people wanted my advice, and I felt a definite ordination at that time. And I really believed that. I don't think it came from me. And it was almost like something descended on me as though the Lord had said, this is not only what I want you to do, but I'm going to help you do it. So there was a sense of mission and a message that was not something I set out to develop or learn. It was just an awareness that people were in need, and I felt called to give of myself. In Acts 3:6, you remember there was a man who had been lame from birth, and they were carrying him over to the temple, to the gate. And he apparently did that every day. And when they saw Peter and John, they asked him for money. And Peter said, silver and gold I do not have, but what I do have, I give to you. And I kind of felt like that's what the Lord was saying.
Yeah.
You don't have all the answers. Certainly not. You don't even have all the questions. Mm. But you do have some of them, and I want you to give to the people who are asking.
Doctor, that calling you felt, that ordination that was put on you, where did that come from? What was going on there?
Lou Anne, I can only guess, but I interpreted it and do today as being part of a generational blessing. Mm-hmm. My great-grandfather prayed for me before I was born, and I'm the fourth generation down, and he was praying for my generation. And then, of course, my dad prayed continually for me. And I just think God will do what he will do.
It's evident.
And that's the only way I can understand it now. Ken, as I said a few minutes ago, that you and I have walked similar paths. You've been aware of your gift from the Lord, too, haven't you?
I think that there's a great, both with the purpose of that, using that gift, and with recognizing it as a gift and being able to express it. You know, that whole thing of, aw, shucks, it really isn't me. But the truth of the matter is, how freeing is it to stand in front of a group and simply give what God has given you? I recognized, for me anyway, how selfish to stand there and expect the audience to enrich me. Please, by your laughter, bestow something upon me. Well, that creates tremendous tension and unbelievable pressure on the speaker. It isn't about me. This is about giving to other people what God has given you. And that just, that has changed me.
You know, our magnificent God who spun the whole universe into being with the Word has a sense of humor, don't you think? Don't you see evidence that maybe sometimes he smiles? I don't know how to fix that with my understanding of his holiness, but I rather think that he created this sense of humor and this laughter. Chuckling along that we do wasn't our idea, and it's into the human gene pool.
Oh, yes.
He must think things are funny.
Yeah, and when you think of – well, it goes back to if you identify humor as a gentle way to acknowledge human frailty, it's his. That whole concept is his. If there's a way to allow people to see what they won't look at any other way, a man who will look at his disciples – I'm sorry, I've never been able to get past this – and say, it is easier to get – a camel through the eye of a needle than to get a rich man into heaven. Now, I've read all the notes in the bottom of the Bible, how that was really a small hole in the wall, and if the camel got down and he could actually get through there, but only if he got on his knees. Woo. You know, that's exciting. Except that the disciples' response made you realize what he said was impossible. The disciples said, that can't be done. Mm-hmm. Of course, my mind gets a picture of a camel and a needle and asks the question, where would you start? Would you lick your fingers and get that tail down to a fine point? And if you ever got him through, he'd be one strung-out camel. Maybe that's the point.
You know, I have a weird sense of humor, rather like you do. And one of the funniest stories in the Bible to me, nobody else thinks is funny, but I do. And I remember when Paul was being followed by this man who claimed to have the same gifts that Paul and Peter and the other apostles did. And he was walking along behind, taking credit for everything. And these demons jumped on him and beat him up and tore his clothes off, and he went running naked down the road. That, to me, was a funny moment.
Remind me not to follow you and take credit for anything.
We're out of time, Ken, and it's fun talking to you. I knew
it
would be, and you and I have met together through the years. And I just would like to continue this conversation. Don't go anywhere. You are a good man and a good friend. And
thanks
for being with us today.
It's my privilege.
And for listeners who've no doubt been captivated by your story, Ken, and want to find out more about you and what you do, we will be sure to link to your website. Ken has a fabulous blog at his site, along with lots more information about his Dynamic Communicators Workshops. You can even find out if Ken has a speaking event in your area soon. If you prefer to call us or even partner with us financially in our work, the number to call, 877-732-6825, 877-732-6825. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for more with Ken Davis tomorrow on the next Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
The news comes in all shapes, sizes, and formats these days. But how do you cut through all the noise and get to the heart of matters that affect your family? Stop by drjamesdobson.org and sign up for Dr. Dobson's monthly newsletter. You'll find clarity on the tough issues, encouragement for daily life, and trusted principles to help you build strong, healthy, and connected families. Go to drjamesdobson.org and sign up today. That's drjamesdobson.org.